That's the thing that drives me absolutely insane, is that it just, you get dinged on everything nowadays. It's not just you getting dinged on the phone. It used to be just, oh, let me just turn the phone off so I don't have to hear anything. No. It's,
I just put that on Do Not Disturb as I'm getting like 3 messages from someone. So they're probably like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. They're just like, oh, yeah. I always wondered if they just see it.
And they see it right away. I was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, they just see it and just like, oh, am I the one that just made him do that? That's what I think every single time I put people on Do Not Disturb.
Yep.
My phone lives on it now. I've had this conversation before too. It's so crazy how we used to just wait for someone to text us, call us, anything, type of contact. And nowadays, we're just gassed out from having constant notifications.
Dude, it's crazy.
It's just nonstop.
It's too much.
And like I said, I'll turn this phone off. I have 2 phones. I left the other one at home. And I've talked about it plenty of times. I mean, the other phone, my mom and 2 of my friends have the number, and like my family, my immediate family. Besides that, no one else has that number.
That's good.
And it's nice because I'll turn this phone off at like 5:30, 6 o'clock.
Right.
And I'll just bring that to jujitsu, or I'll just browse that, and there's no social media on it. There's nothing. So you get to actually just enjoy and just.
That's good, man. I got
to
do that.
You get to just be present. I mean, you get to just be
it's
present.
Like a burner, yeah.
But the issue, I'm going to tell you what the issue is. The issue is that I turn this off, and even though I turn this off, the iPad dings, the watch dings. So now I have to go and just like decimate all the notifications because I'm so tired of just hearing everything at the same exact time.
Yeah, dude, it's stimulus just overload nonstop from the second we wake up to when we sleep.
Stuff, I've been really good lately. I've been really good about not overriding my brain and letting it just be constant with things in the background, with constant scrolling, with everything like that. You know, for a long time, people were going, oh, did you see my story? No, I didn't see anybody's story. And it's no offense to you. Right. I'm just intentionally trying to post and dip. I want nothing to do with the app.
100%. Especially as content like creators, it's so hard to not get sucked in. Because you want to consume so you know what you're posting and be relevant, but you get sucked in
and then it's just hours. It's back when I would scroll. I think today was the longest I scrolled in a while. I went to my mom's and I picked up some laundry because I don't have a laundry machine in my apartment, and she helps me out because the jujitsu stuff, man, I burn through laundry every 2 days. Okay. There's a mountain of laundry between that and the regular gym.
Right.
And we were just standing in the kitchen, and I showed her a couple of jujitsu memes, and she was laughing, and then I just
kept going.
You kept going for like 5 minutes. You just go, whoa, 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 and you just leave.
Dopamine hit, man.
Yeah, so that's why the other phone, I want no social media on it. There's nothing. Nothing at all. I had Reddit on it for a little while, and then I deleted it because I realized Reddit was just basically the same thing.
Same exact.
It's a social site. Yep. Except now I'm looking up hemochromatosis and everything and being paranoid about, oh, is this a symptom? Oh, my elbows keep making all this noise. Is this a symptom? It's like, no, dummy. You've just been double training for months now, and your elbows hate you. So listen, should I just say SK?
Yeah, SK works.
I was going to say, because I feel like you said SK, and then how do you pronounce the entire name though?
Saranj Kapoor.
Saranj Kapoor.
Yep. They're perfect.
Saranj Kapoor, SK.
Yep.
Welcome to the show, brother.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate you for coming down. I know you're a busy man. You reminded me that we actually had spent some time together before. Can you enlighten the people about our little meetup prior to this years ago?
Yeah, so I was working at Gym Guys, the in-home personal training company, and they asked me to film some videos in someone's backyard. I don't really remember who it was or why it was there.
He was a fantastic model.
But they were like, let's get some videos in. And you were the guy filming the videos, and that's where we first met. That was probably 2019?
Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah, I had just started the year prior. 2018 is when I really started doing videos.
Yeah.
So Josh was like my first big client that I started doing a lot of stuff with. So it was awesome. I mean, he brought me to the Recharge events, and I was doing a lot of stuff with them. It was great. It's weird because the business is cyclical. So you see, there's like high, just like any business, honestly. Yeah. I mean, unless you're in a medical profession where you see sick people all the time, generally.
Yeah, it's tough because everyone asks me that question. Oh, is it a busy season? I'm like, it's kind of steady, right? Yeah. It's like there might be slow like weeks or months, but the seasons have been kind of steady.
Yeah.
Which, knock on wood, it's great.
That's great. Yeah,
people just keep getting hurt.
I mean, that's not great, but it's great that you could put them back together.
Of course.
Like what is it? Like Humpty Dumpty style.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, piece them back together.
Exactly.
And so you've always had a passion for fitness, and is that kind of what it always was?
I think it was like when I was 15, 16, I started working out. I saw my older brother doing it, so I got into it. YouTube fitness at the time was blowing up, like Matt Ogis, the Hodge twins, all these people, and I just fell in love. Went to the gym, started working out at home, all that stuff. Came back, I think it was like 11th grade, came back in 12th grade, and everyone's like, what the hell happened? How many steroids did you take? I was like, I didn't do anything. All I did was just kind of worked out a little bit. I wasn't really even dieting.
You were on that A2 grass-fed way before anybody.
Exactly. And then just fell in love with it, honestly. And the fitness, it's always been, it's been the one constant in the last 13 years.
The one constant in a sea of chaos for all of us.
Exactly. Yep.
I find that that's a lot of us. We hunker down and we attach ourselves to whether it's jujitsu, whether it's fitness, whether it's just anything in life. It could be Magic the Gathering. We find our niche that we really enjoy that kind of takes us out of the stressors of natural life and everything that we deal with on a daily basis. And we can kind of just decompress and enjoy time where time feels like it kind of just is limitless.
100%. I think everyone needs that outlet, whether it's fitness, whether it's jiu-jitsu, some form of, I think we do need some form of physical outlet, right? Because there's just nothing like it. Like you forget, you go into this flow state, you just kind of forget, and it just feels great. Right. So I think everyone needs that outlet.
I actually forget that there are people that don't train at all.
It's mind blowing, man.
I actually forget that. It's like I always like sometimes people. You'll talk to people and you just be like, yeah, well, I have to get up at 5 a.m. or 6 a.m., go to the gym, hit it. And they look at you bewildered.
Right.
Like, what?
Right. We get so sucked into the space that like when someone doesn't do it, you're just like, damn.
Yeah. What does that feel like out. To just not, and not only are they missing out, but you start to actually think about it in terms of like, what do you do when you just finish work or you before you go to work you're just hanging around and I don't know, you just come home from work, let's say you're there all day, you come home from work and you just sit there for another 5 hours, 4 hours, and then go
that's
to bed.
Literally the reality of most people's lives, I think.
I'm like, oh, okay, I don't know, to me
each their own.
To me, I need that ability to get the energy out. You've been sitting all day and it doesn't feel like necessarily you've been at, you know, oh, I feel so tired from work. It's more of a lethargy that you, lethargic feeling that you feel. It's not necessarily I'm tired because I was physically exerted.
Right. Absolutely.
So it's, I don't know. It's just always been a weird thought to me that, wow, you just go home and you just don't do anything. Jeez, or you do, I mean, you could do the hobbies that we were talking about, but on the side of the physicality of things to actually get that, the benefits of the health, the benefits of the mind.
Right. And that's the main reason now I do it, probably more so for the mental benefit than anything else. I don't think I'm getting any more muscle, lean tissue naturally anymore. I just go there to keep myself sane mentally. Honestly, just the one constant, just I need it, right? And again, you get addicted to it, but I'd rather be addicted than not addicted. Because like you said, most people just going home 4 or 5 hours, scrolling, you know, screen sucking or just watching TV. I don't think that's the right way to live.
Bro, I get digitally depressed looking at some of the things I see on Instagram. Yeah. And that's, we're talking a minimal timed amount of time that I'm doing it on the actual Instagram or TikTok or whatever. So can you imagine people that just have no time limit at all? And they're just sitting there for hours and hours. I had this debate with my cousin recently. I said to him, I said, yo, bro, you've just been on your phone the entire time, Easter Sunday. Yeah. He's just sitting at lunch and he must have opened up the TikTok app. He must have opened it up like 6 times, watched the same video, no facial reaction, nothing, and then just closed the app again. But he kept opening it up and just doing nothing. I'm like, why are you opening the app? Put your phone away, bro. And it's just, I said to him, he's like, oh, I'm not really on it this much. You're not?
Yeah.
What do you do when you're by yourself and you actually are bored?
Right.
Because we use these as a crutch to just take the boredom away at any chance we can.
Numb you. Yeah. And they're designed to keep you coming back, right? Like there's countless times where even I will reopen an app knowing that I just closed it. And I'm like, what the hell am I doing? But again, I have that awareness to be like, okay, I could see myself reopening it when I just closed it. I'm like,
so weird. I do it too.
We curse, right? You're good with cursing, right?
Yeah, you can curse. Yeah.
Like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, reopen. I'm like, all right. Then I just put it away and, you know, get myself into something more, you know, like deliberate and just active.
Yeah. Yeah. I find that the muscle memory and when you switch your home screen around, no matter what operating system, I'm trying to say, not app, whatever operating system you're running, because my other phone's Android. So it's like once you start to get that muscle memory of where Instagram is or where TikTok or Snapchat or whatever your guilty pleasure is,
mail,
text messages, anything, you find
checking
that
the weather
just gravitates right to it. And it's such a weird sensation. Yeah, it really
so
is.
True.
But definitely. They're designed for this. We have to remember these things. And I've had to explain to a lot of friends, You got to stop watching everybody's stories. You got to stop feeding into it, because why do you think Instagram is free? It's because we're the product.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Our attention is being bartered for currency to the actual tech companies by all these advertisers. And we're constantly seeing shit. And they'll deny it. Oh, no, it's safe. And blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, we'll mention something and they don't listen to you. No, they never would. Why am I getting ads on it if I never clicked on anything? But my man SK just told me about these crazy leather chaps. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, all I see are leather chaps.
Dude, it's crazy.
That's right.
It's the cookies, apparently. If you enable cookies on websites, that gives them the access to get into your microphone and listen to whatever you're saying. So then they're going to run ads targeted specifically to that. Yeah, it happens every day to me.
But then they just ram it down your throat every 4 seconds.
Because once you click cookies.
It's like every 5 seconds, every site I go to, bro. And then you just go, oh my God, I don't care. I just want to read the article.
Exactly. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's crazy. These phones suck. So, dude, I got another 10 years of being on these things. We're going to shoot some crazy videos and podcasts.
Yeah.
Another 10 years on these things. And then hopefully this thing is big enough where I can have other people run it for me.
Yeah.
And I can just be in the moment for everything.
Absolutely. No, and I agree. There's a lot of negative, but I think there's a lot of upside too and a lot of potential. Because again, it enables you to do stuff like this. It enables me to do the way I do my business, a lot of online stuff. Like that stuff wasn't possible 5-10 years ago. Right.
It was. You just needed an entire production team to do it.
Right. And business was just completely different at the time. And now it enables a lot more opportunities. It comes with a huge cost, right? That's taking a toll on a lot of people's lives. But I think the upside outweighs the downside, in my opinion.
Okay. And now let me ask you this. In terms of the upside versus the downside, obviously, mental health issues, just constant scrolling and the derealization or personalization of yourself with life and what life actually is outside of the technological walls.
Right.
Besides business, what do you think is the upside? I'm curious.
Besides business, I think it gives people the opportunity to see that there's all this potential out there, right? Whatever field it is that you want to succeed in or do art, music, business, whatever it is, I think it enables people to realize that the potential is out there, whatever it is you really want to do. Mm-hmm. I think that's the huge upside. But again, it comes with a huge cost.
Yeah, the inspirational side of things.
Right, because a lot of times, you know, you might think you want to do something and you're like, oh no, I don't know if I could do this. And you see other people doing this. You're like, there's a shift in your brain that's like, okay, this is possible. Right. That's why a lot of like coaching programs and mentorships work, because you see a community of other people doing what you're doing. You're like, oh, wait, this is totally doable. I just got to do X, Y, Z and keep doing it and it'll happen. So I think that's the upside.
Okay. I can agree with that. Yeah. I can agree with that. I like that. I like the community driven stuff. Like I've wanted to deactivate my Facebook for a while now. But one of the reasons that I don't is because I do belong to a bunch of epilepsy groups for Kenji. I deleted the app off my phone, so if I do go to Facebook, it's very intentional as opposed to just like clicking it automatically. So I'll do it on a website, like the web browser.
Yeah.
And I'll actually focus on doing that. But besides that, I mean, I try to just limit the amount of time spent on these things and to actually be, I've said this a million times, but to actually be a content producer versus a consumer. Mm. That's really what I want.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think you still need to have some form of consumption to be a more effective producer. That's what I've found in my experience. Because every time I'm trying to get ideas or I'm thinking of what to post or, you know, how to talk about this, I'll always refer to other content creators, but that's where you can kind of get sucked in and you're just an hour later, you're like, what the hell have I just done?
I would say that and comparison is the thief of joy.
Comparison, absolutely. But I think—
why did this guy get a million views when I explained this more concisely and more thorough than this person?
I will 100% agree, but I think right now we're at a really good time where good content will outshine whatever it is. So I think if someone has that or they think that, I think you have to ask yourself, how can I make this better? Because right now the eyeballs are just so high. Like the potential, if you post good content, you can rock it.
Yeah.
But most people are just not posting good content. Even sometimes I feel like I'm not posting good content because then I'll go look at other people's, other PTs, other therapists posting. I'm like, damn, I'm not even touching, you know, like my full potential here. Like there's so much more.
And then the downside though is that now you feel like it's another job.
100%.
It goes from being something that's fun.
Yeah.
And something where you want to educate people and not only drive business for yourself, for your practice and everything like that, and get more of a name for yourself, especially.
Yeah, absolutely.
But now it's like, oh God, now I got to like, how do you use After Effects to highlight muscles in the video? And, you know, you do all these extra things and,
for sure.
You know, you don't realize that these dudes have just outsourced it.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I think the bigger you do get or the deeper you get into this, the more of an obligation you have to your audience, right? Because then, you know, when I had a couple thousand followers, I was like, all right, whatever, I can post whatever. Now I've gotten a little bit more, I'm like, shit, the pressure's on, right? Because you have more eyeballs, you're like, I can't post the same shit I was posting last year, 2 years ago. So I think it almost forces yourself to level up.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And one caveat I'll say for you especially is, and it's positive, it's you don't want to differ yourself too far from where you started, and you started gaining traction and the audience.
100%.
So a lot of people, and I'll use Joe Rogan as an example. A lot of people will think that they need to upgrade more than they actually have to, but it was really the original authenticity that the people liked. It wasn't necessarily that they were shooting on 8K cameras or anything like that, or the audio was absolutely pristine. They attached themselves to you as a human being and the stuff that you were putting out there because it moved them in some particular way. Yeah. When Joe moved his studio from LA to Austin, he spent a ton of money, like loads of money, on creating this, like, I don't know if you ever, do you watch Joe at all?
Of course.
You remember when he had the red studio? That little bubble, that little chamber it looked like?
Yeah.
People hated it.
Yeah.
So he changed it back to look like the studio in LA with the red crepe in the background and the picture behind him.
That's what blew him up.
It's so crazy. Right. Like that setup was nowhere near as expensive as what that whole custom echo chamber of a podcast studio was. It's just wild how it just, you know, you don't want to stray too far because your fans became fans because they saw you in the infancy stage.
100%. Yeah.
But anyway, I wanted to talk about a couple of different things. Reviewing your listen, Ricky Meshkow, shouts to Ricky. Ricky's the homie.
Shout out to Ricky.
Ricky has been a friend of mine since high school and very well known, very really great dude, well known throughout the island as a trainer.
Sure.
He's with BFT now. What acronyms?
Yeah, I know. I forgot.
Fucking so many. BFT, and he trains at ProFit. He goes a lot of different places, and it's always good to see him. But we've always been in contact, like through the grapevine, and following each other. Just never really sparked it up. And he was like, "Yo, you got to get SK on. You guys got to talk about his journey, everything that he's gone through." And then I started looking and parsing through some of your content, and I was like, "Yeah, yo, I need to dive in a little bit deeper about what makes him tick and who you are." So the first things first, you're a doctor of physical therapy,
correct?
Yeah. Any other
I had my CPT, but I don't renew that anymore.
Okay,
it's not personal training, quote unquote. Just DPT.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And I saw that this all came about a couple years after you had a pretty bad back injury.
Yeah.
And that was from deadlifting?
Deadlifting and squatting.
Yep. So now, somebody that was doing a lot of compound movements for a good portion of my bodybuilding career, I definitely understand. Now, I want you to talk about the herniated disc that you suffered from that.
Yeah.
I had L5-S1 herniations from a car accident.
Okay.
And I was 19, 20 years old. I used to have radiating pain down my both legs.
Yep.
So I can sympathize when I was reading the story on you and just be like, wow, man, when you wrote that, I felt it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh man, my ass cheeks numb.
I know. It's like, it's back.
It's not a good numb. It's not a good numb.
Nah, I hear you. Yeah. So growing up, I always had back pain, lower back pain. The doctor said I had slipped disc, whatever, went to physical therapy. I was very young at the time, so I don't really know if it worked or not. But ever since I got into fitness, I was always, you know, kind of cautious about my back, but I never really had any issues with working out. It actually felt good. Then I got into powerlifting and was doing really well, you know, hitting good numbers. But again, this was before I was a physical therapist. I wasn't really training smart. I wasn't warming up. I wasn't checking my form. You know, I didn't have like a coach guiding me, all this stuff, because every variable plays a role in this stuff. And then one day it was during squats, I hurt my back pretty bad. I could feel it on my way up. And that was just like the initial back injury. From there, I just took a couple months, didn't really squat, whatever. went away. And then I think it was like the same year or the year after is when I was deadlifting. That's when I felt like a pop and I felt the shooting pain down my leg. That's when I got like the herniated disc and the sciatica. And from that, it was just probably 3.5 years of just constant pain. I went to chiropractors, PTs, this rehab, all this, nothing worked until I finally sought out some good rehab. And he was actually a chiropractor, but he does a lot of PT stuff, physical therapy stuff that I do now with my clients, which really helped me understand that, like, hey, just because you hurt yourself deadlifting doesn't mean we stop deadlifting. That's just because you can't squat 400 pounds doesn't mean you can't squat anything. You know, I remember one of the first sessions with him, he had me do a deadlift from like a kettlebell deadlift from a block. It was modified, but I was like, wow, like this guy has me deadlifting when all the doctors said, you can't deadlift ever again. You can't squat ever again. And here I am deadlifting with no pain here. And he just kind of reinforced that, like, hey, this is, you have to still do the movement to still train those muscles in safe and effective ways without flaring anything up. And that kind of made that big mindset shift in my head. And then, of course, going to PT school, learning about the body and learning about all these mechanics and improving my mobility. That was a big, big change as well. You know, making sure I'm doing my mobility work, not just going in the gym and just pushing weights all around, because that's what I did for years. And then that's what kind of led to so many injuries.
So now the squat, how did you hurt yourself squatting? Was it like tucking the hips underneath at the bottom? Was it just a weird?
It was just, movement? I just remember I was doing 10 sets of three. I was on a Matt Ogus program, 10 sets of three. And I think it was the seventh set. I believe it was the seventh set. As I was coming up, I was like, ooh, I tweaked something. I remember it was so vivid in ProFit. I just remember like taking my belt off. And I'm like, shit, this is bad. I went to the bathroom. I'm like, I don't think I could continue this workout. So I just left.
What were the following days like?
It was just like tightness and this kind of like sharpness pain that I was like very limited in my mobility. But I think at the time I didn't seek out help right away, which I should have, because now I see it as a physical therapist, like the faster and the quicker you get the help, the easier and you know, painless your rehab is. The longer you wait, the harder it's going to be, right? So that's why I think.
And now why is that?
Just because there's so many more variables, right? Like if you have something sharp or shooting and you kind of just let it go unmanaged, it can trickle into other areas, right? Your hip could be messed up. You could start compensating on one side. You could start, you know, having other issues around the body. It could turn into more some nerve damage. So I think it's just, there's too many other variables to play around with when you can kind of just get that professional help right away, get it managed, and then understand how to probably take care of this for the long run, and then you'll be better off.
So you tweak yourself squatting, and then how long after were you deadlifting?
I don't remember the exact time, but it was like probably the same year. Yeah.
So it wasn't quick, like a couple days later.
No.
It was like a month or two.
Yeah, it was the same year because I was still powerlifting. I still wanted to compete at the time as a powerlifter, and I just kept pushing the buttons.
Yeah. It happens, man. I did that for years. Yeah. I did that for years, and you know, until I met my functional medicine guy down in Florida. And we were talking back and forth, and he just said, listen, man, you're not deadlifting and your back is killing you because of it. He goes, you need to be sumo deadlifting, create a stronger posterior chain and all this stuff. And I was like, really? Okay. I mean, we got me up. I was doing 500 on sumos.
Nice.
No pain.
That's like, what I was doing, sumos.
The more I deadlifted, the less pain I was in. It was so weird. It was so strange.
Yeah.
And it was just crazy how you... And I talked to Dr. Scott about this when Scott was on Long Island Stretch.
Yep.
And it's crazy how you think of and probably what you went through, which is even more of a reason why it pushed you to become in the position that you're in now. You think of the original physical therapy and what it was. Right. You know, just stretch here do a couple of these exercises and okay, have a good one. Right. And you look around and you see a bunch of old people and
yeah.
And car accident
victims. It changes their lives, right? You do a couple bridges and clamshells for them.
Yeah.
Changes their life. Yeah. Great. Time and place.
Yeah. But you could just smell the car accident insurance fraud. And you're wow, man, no one's actually injured here.
Oh, yeah.
But it's so weird how now knowing you guys and what you do with patients and how you rehab yourselves, which I want to hear about some of the methods that you feel work best, it's amazing how that's the real physical therapy. That's the real way to prevent injuries and come back from setbacks of injuries, is to actually rehab properly, work the spots out before it trickles into other areas and creates imbalances and overcompensations and whatnot. It's pretty crazy how the body will just automatically adapt, and now, oh, well, the lat's locked up. All right, well, let's use more shoulders. You know, it'll just start pulling. And you're like, oh my God, why is everything hurt now?
Right.
100%. So I can definitely agree that that was definitely something that I went through myself, and my original physical therapy when I got my hernia disc was just horrible. It felt like a jail sentence.
I could probably guess everything you did.
Yeah. Oh my God, it felt like a jail sentence. Yeah. I had herniated disc, but for some reason, if I'm thinking back to it now, I would do the...
arm bike
for 10 minutes. And I was a fat little kid, so I was just like sweating my ass off doing nothing. And I was like, oh my God, what's going on here? And then they'd have you stretch and do a couple of movements. It felt like a jail sentence. It felt like community service, like I didn't want to be there type of situation. Like I got caught. And they're like, well, you gotta give back. Yeah. I was like, okay, how much longer?
Absolutely.
So we talked about getting injured during your lifts.
Yep.
So now looking back on that, with everything that you know now and your rehab techniques, your lifting techniques, whatnot, how important is it to have good form when you lift?
Oh, very important. Because I look back at some of these videos that I was doing, I'm like, oh, I was destined to get hurt sooner or later. It was bad. The thing is, it's form definitely matters for sure, but it also matters as you get more, you know, heavier with the weights. Because the heavier you get with weights, the more likely you are to kind of, you know, mess something up if your form is bad. So people get very, you know, over strenuous about form, but I think it really does play a big role when you're trying to stay pain and injury free for the long run. Absolutely, 100%.
And what are some, between bodybuilding, CrossFit? Obviously, you probably see a lot of CrossFit athletes.
No, not really. I mean, it's mostly bodybuilding. It's mostly people who, you know, are avid gym goers. Not a lot of CrossFit, to be honest.
Really? Yeah. I would have thought that it would have been CrossFit. And listen, I get no shit on CrossFit. I think CrossFit's a great sport. I think it's kind of what I do now is like a hybrid of bodybuilding, CrossFit at OG when I train there. So it's cool. You know, you do a lot of functional compound movements, this and that, you throw it in, then you're doing sprints on the the assault runner. But I would assume because of the workout of the day and just like everyone, how they just run right into it. But at the same time, they almost have more of a pulse on the modality and mobility work of all of that industry.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they have, Whoop and the Sisu saunas. And they just kind of all go hand in hand with recovery, and bodybuilders definitely don't.
Yeah, yeah. No, my first job was in a CrossFit gym, and we did, I mean, that was almost all the clients we saw there. It's definitely more of an injury prone, just because, again, there's more variables you're doing. You're not just doing standard barbell curls or a couple bench presses. You're doing hand cleans and clean and
not just a binary movement.
Right. So there's a lot more variables. So we saw a lot of injuries there. I personally now don't see a lot of CrossFitters just because I'm not kind of marketing to them. I'm sure if I marketed to them, they'd probably come, but yeah.
So what do you try to work on now?
Mostly bodybuilders, avid gym goers, because I know that community, right? I'm a bodybuilder myself. I get it. Even if you're not a bodybuilder, quote unquote, competing, right? If you're an avid gym goer and you're hurt, like I know what it feels like to not be able to perform at your fullest potential. So that's who I usually market to.
And what was it like getting your pro card in OCB?
It was great.
Natural, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a great feeling. That was a tough prep, but it paid off. Yeah.
How long did you prep for?
That prep was 10 weeks. Oh. 10 weeks. 10 weeks. And again, that's on the shorter end.
You said that was
a
long prep.
Is that I know.
Tough prep.
I would not recommend that short of a prep. I mean, it felt long mentally.
23 weeks.
That was
brutal.
I would recommend 15 to 20 weeks for most people. But 10 weeks, I did. And then the one after that, I did 9 weeks, 22 pounds. And that was the worst I've ever been.
9 weeks and 22 pounds. Damn, bro. And what was your best look? How long did you give yourself, like time-wise, for a prep?
The one where I got my pro card, that was my best look for sure. I nailed it. It was perfect.
That was the 10-week one?
Yeah, the 9-week one, I missed it. I lost muscle.
And what did you just not peak correctly?
I lost muscle. I was just at a point where calories were so low. Right. And my activity was so high. It was just eating away at muscle. I look back at pictures of my legs. It was just, my legs were like gone.
Isn't it crazy how fast it withers away versus what how long it takes to put it on, especially on the natural side of things?
Right. And if you look at it, the weight wise, I was like identical weight on the pro card show and my first pro show, identical weight, but the look was completely different. For that show, my first show as a pro, I was also traveling, went to Alabama. So there was travel. It was like throwing me off because I was still trying to get my meals in, holding water. A lot more variables there versus the pro card where I just drove up to Jersey.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I never did OCB. I did NPC.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting an interesting experience. Yeah. 23 weeks as a natural athlete at 22 years old, and you look around you and you go, wow, I am
You're like, I forgot the
severely outgunned over here.
You forgot the steroids.
I forgot the steroids. I thought it was the chicken and rice, but it was not. It was the steroids.
My recommendation is if you're going to compete naturally, just go to a natural federation. It's just not worth it.
Yeah, I was setting myself up for failure. I don't know why I thought I had... I don't know why. I thought I just could compete, and I was delusional, and I stepped on that stage, and I looked at the guys in my class in men's physique, and I went, oh, these are like 212 bodybuilders. Yeah. I'm going to go sit down. I couldn't wait to get off stage. And then I did one more show, and I just my heart wasn't in it. It was just each session that I did between the shows, I just started getting more and more discouraged. And I was like, oh, man, I got to do this again.
Yeah.
And then I stepped up there and I looked around and there were only four guys in my class and I got fourth and I just went, I'm good on this.
Yeah.
I'm all set. I was like, it's not worth the, what is it? The juice is not worth the squeeze, man.
That was one and done?
Yeah. Two and done.
Two and done.
Okay. Two and done. And then I lied to myself a couple times. I said, yeah, I'm going to get back in. I'm going to do it. I got it. And then the functional guy that I was working with, he had me looking insane for six weeks out. I looked insane for what it was. I mean, I was doing 40 minutes of cardio a week.
Wow.
And I was like
40 minutes a week.
A week. And he had me.
That's amazing.
He had me diced at 6 weeks out already. And he was just like, dude, we are cruising.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But he reverse dieted me the right way.
Yeah.
We took 2 years after that show to that.
Right.
And we reverse dieted me the right way. I was maintaining my body weight at 600 grams of carbs a day. It was a hassle to eat that much. And I was eating, you know, this is way before I knew seed oils or anything like that. Right. So I was just eating shit, man. I was eating Pop-Tarts. I was eating cereal. I was eating all kinds of stuff just to get the carbs up there. So to say I was healthy, it's another story, and it wasn't even like his advice. He was just like, just eat a lot of rice. And I just, I was like, I don't want to eat that much rice. I'll show you. But it was, it was tough, man, because I sent him the picture and I remember just taking the picture, smiling in the mirror for the picture. And then I was just, I finished it. Yeah. I looked at the picture and I went, all right, cool. I sent it to him. He was like, dude, you look sick. Blah, blah, blah. and he goes, and I said, yeah, I guess. And he just goes, what's wrong, man? I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
He goes, really? I said, yeah, I'm good. He goes, all right, dude, go eat. He goes, you're shredded for summer. Enjoy.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, it takes away. I mean, it takes everything out of you, like physically, mentally, financially. Like it's hectic. It takes everything.
So I don't know.
There's a lot of sacrifice. College. It's a lot of sacrifice. Yeah, the food you got to eat, the supplements, the registration. Like it's not a sport to make money, but you know. It's definitely a lot of sacrifice.
Let's see. Where we at? Please hold people. I got to show my man a little something, something. No, that's Arash. He did not forget the steroids. That's for sure. All right. This is me at 150. That was when I first competed.
That was your first show?
That was my first show.
You look good.
Yeah. For a natural athlete.
definitely not NPC.
Was NPC.
I'm saying like competing with the NPC people. Yeah, no.
Yeah, no.
You would do really good in OCB there, though.
Yeah.
You could probably get your pro card.
You think so?
Yeah. I've seen the competition.
About to come back.
I've seen the competition.
And then this was me 6 weeks out with the natural guy, with like the...
Oh, shit.
Yeah, like...
Now you put on some good muscle.
Big difference, man.
Big difference.
And I was 150 pounds in the first picture, and there I was sitting at like 175.
Wow.
And I was 6 weeks out still, and we were just chipping away, nice and easy. So it was good, man. Like for what it was nice, but never again. Now my life, it's crazy. Now my life is jujitsu.
Right.
I'm in the fight world. It's so weird, man.
Yeah, jujitsu is awesome. I have a lot of clients who love it. And you know, you get like it's a crazy competitive sport, but in a good competitive way, right? It's not like you're trying to beat people's asses all day long, and you get a crazy workout.
Crazy workout. Yeah. I mean, so I go to OG, I do all my stuff there, usually every morning when I'm really serious. So I've gone every day this week except Tuesday. I give myself a rest day on Tuesday. And The last couple of days were good. They were push-pull. Tomorrow's the conditioning day. Mondays are the conditioning days at OG, but I usually do jiu-jitsu at night.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, man. Everyone keeps asking me, like, Nick, you look sick. You look this, that, blah, blah, blah. I still wear 2X. This is a 2X hoodie. I still wear all my 2X hoodies from when I was heavier. But I tell them, yo, it's the grappling. It's crazy.
Yeah.
When I feel good, and I haven't been 100% in a few months. I just came back from an ankle injury. Mm. Now I have bursitis in my left elbow.
Brutal.
Yeah, dude. It's not like bulging out,
yeah.
but it's, oh, dude, if I post on this elbow, it's like you want to just scream. That's how much it hurts. So I actually went today. I bought elbow pad with a little sleeve. And then I bought a compression sleeve to go over it. So it's double padded. So at least I can still drill and not worry about it so much. But when you're rolling, man, you like bash that against the mat.
Yeah.
You want to go, you scream. You're like, oh my God, it hurts so bad. But the grappling is just another element of just how you look at a wrestler's body and you look at all these dudes that just have this explosive strength and they're lean and they're muscular and you go, oh, it makes sense now.
Yeah.
But I do like how you said you have clients that do jiu-jitsu because we're always broken.
No, really.
It's the gentle art.
Elbows, shoulders is big with that.
AC joint,
like AC joint, even like knees, because any hinge joint where you're bending excessively, because a lot of that grappling, a lot of that you're just like in extreme positions, so it's tough. I mean, you know, you could do everything right. I mean, that's what bodybuilding too. You could do everything right and still get hurt tomorrow.
Yeah,
right.
The ankle injury was tough. That I'm finally coming back from. That was I called Scott and everybody. I was like, right after it happened, I went. Yeah, I thought my ankle was shot. Like, I thought it was done.
Something?
No, I almost probably did. So basically, long story short, going back and forth, and me and this kid stand up. The round was over. He re-engaged me. So I go, okay. So I grab him back. And now I'm like, what are you doing, bro? Like, the round's over. And I throw him to the side, and he rips me straight down, but he falls on top of me when he does. Mm. And when he did that, my right ankle went completely underneath both of us, and all you heard was snap.
Oof.
And I was like, oh my God, dude. And I felt my big toe go numb. Oof. And I just went, oh, dude, he's going to roll off of me, and there's going to be bone sticking out. It's over for this ankle. And Matt Serra comes over. He's like, Nick, you good? You good? Like, what's going on? I go, I have no idea yet. I'm not a doctor. I have no clue. And I stood up, and it was like tender. And I, okay, you know, adrenaline's probably high right now for the injury area. So I know that it's going to hurt later. So I grab an ice pack and I lay down. I sit down, and then I leave, and I'm hobbling. And as the day goes on, I'm really hobbling. I said, fuck. So I went to Nick and Scott, and they said it was probably a grade 2 sprain.
Yeah, I was just going to say grade 2. You didn't get an X-ray or anything?
No. Probably should have.
Could have, yeah.
Probably should have. But at this point, I mean, that was 9 weeks ago, 10 weeks ago. Good. Yeah. It still hurts. Not a lot, but a little bit. Certain movements, you still feel it.
Probably 12 weeks or so.
Yeah. It feels like 95-ish percent.
Even another couple of weeks.
But basically, the injury started in the front of my ankle, like right in the front right. That's where I felt it instantly.
Yeah.
But then as it started healing and getting progressively better, the pain point was actually between the little bone on the side of my ankle and my Achilles. I guess there's a ligament there.
That's probably the one.
So
that's tough.
It's a tough sport, man. I tell people this all the time. Like, they have me help the new kids out all the time.
Right.
And I tell them I literally tell every kid the same thing. I go, yo, I'll be your honest friend here because everyone else will not be honest with you. Tap early.
Yeah.
Okay. Know who you can and can't roll with because there are plenty of people that you won't be able to because they are just too much.
Yeah.
And too much doesn't mean that they're going to best me every single time, but too much to me means you're going to make me unleash everything I have every time we go against each other. And I don't want to do that.
Right.
Because I got work tomorrow. This is a hobby for me. It's not, I'm not a fucking professional fighter.
Right.
So I'm not going to get paid to do this. Yeah. I'm not a jiu-jitsu practitioner. I'm somebody that is enjoying the journey of doing it and learning new things and having an exercise outlet that really releases energy.
And that's what a lot of people forget is like the professional athletes, they're doing all that stuff, but they got the recovery like, you know, night and day. They got cold saunas, cold plunges, whatever it is, ice baths. People massaging them from the second they wake up to when they go to sleep. It's just nonstop recovery on the days they're not like exerting themselves. And that's the same thing with a lot of even like traditional bodybuilding or people that I see. It's like, all right, you can train hard, but just remember like the recovery part is huge, right? And again, you're not a professional athlete where you have access to all these resources or time to put into recovery, right? All we got is 8 hours of sleep. Maximize it. Yeah. And then, of course, do your mobility work and make sure you're prioritizing that too.
What do you feel is the most important sections of staying injury free?
I think most important, I think, will definitely be, of course, sleep, prioritizing some form of mobility work, especially if all you're doing in the gym is push, strength training. You got to do the other part too. And I'm not talking about just a couple basic stretches or whatever, like some dynamic mobility stuff to get joints moving, right? Because I always say if you don't, like just like we say for our strength, if you don't use it, you lose it. It's the same thing for our mobility. If I don't use my shoulder through its entire range of motion, I'm going to lose that range of motion over time. Then what happens? You're 60 and you have arthritis and everyone thinks that's just a normal part of aging. Sure, arthritis might be a normal part of aging, but not everyone that has arthritis is in pain, right? So if you can utilize that joint, the motions effectively from the start in your 20s, 30s, 40s, I think you're better off in the long run to not have all these symptoms that might come with age-related problems.
Yeah, one of the quotes that you had on one of your posts that I really liked, because I've been told that a lot of times, is this is just something that you have to live with forever.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something that you said you can't stand hearing, especially because you were able to not only fix yourself and make yourself healthy and feel better, but you do it with all your patients and clients as well.
I've heard it from countless doctors. When I was hurt, had my herniated disc, the sciatica, they're like, oh no, this is like, I'm like, I would ask, cause again, I was young, naive. I was in a PT at the time. I was like, oh, like, so if I do X, Y, Z, like I'll get out of pain, right? Like I won't have to live with this forever. They're like, no, you know, this is something that you will likely have to live with forever. It just may not be as bad. I'm like, that doesn't sound right. Cause there's plenty of people who have herniated discs or back pain. And then you see them a few years later and they're pain free. Right. And I'm at that level, knock on wood, 3, 4 years now being pain free. And when I say pain free, like legit pain free, aches and sensations, sure, that's a normal part of lifting and, you know, whatever, that's fine, but nothing like what it used to be. So I think it's just complete bullshit that you have to live with it forever. And I've seen.
And what did it take to get you to be pain free?
A lot of the concepts that I talked about, doing my mobility work, smart training, right? Not lifting with my ego, not going crazy. If I feel like I haven't slept that great, or if I feel like I'm kind of off, I'm not going to kill myself in the gym, right? And I feel like even now I'm 29, almost 30, I feel better now than I did in my early 20s, right? And most people is the opposite. And I think now, because of course I'm not like drinking as much, eating better, all these variables that play a big role, right? Training way more, a lot smarter, not going crazy with deadlifts, squats, like stuff like that, that just are more likely to be prone for any kind of pain or injury.
Yeah, I'll write something down to remember my thing. But you know, you said obviously you know a lot more because you aren't drinking a lot as much and this and that. I find that it's a pro and a negative in terms of just we are cursed with knowledge at this point because we know so much.
I think
there's so many things that we know and there's so many things that we know we should do or avoid or this and that we actually get to a point of a stalemate where you're just like, there's like too much to do to try to just be optimal. And it can be, you know, hitting the e-brake feeling sometimes where you're just like, oh, there's so much I got to do. Like, I got to get my morning sun and I got to do a couple of ice showers or baths here and there and avoid the seed oils and no processed foods, but I got to get my cardio in and I got to get my stand up desk. And it's great that we have all of this information at our fingertips, but sometimes it could be overwhelming.
100%. I think a lot of it is just like, if you hit the big pieces, like get your sleep right, get your nutrition right, get your fitness right, everything else is kind of just, you know, icing on the cake, the cold showers, the plunges, the sauna. That stuff, it's not really going to move the needle, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I'll still do them. I like doing cold showers, whatever, but like,
you think it helps? It's a supplementary.
I like
exactly what a supplement is supposed to really mean.
And it's hard and it feels good when you're done with it.
Yeah.
So
it feels so good when you're done with it, man. The ice plunge. See, the thing that sucks about the cold showers though, is that like, I got to turn.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, now the front, now the back. You're just like, oh God. Oh,
you're like, don't be a bitch and stand in the same spot. You got to turn every time.
It feels like you're keep getting every in time. The cold plunge fresh every time you turn like a turkey.
Yeah.
In Boston Market.
Yeah.
That's why I like the baths, because you can just jump in and you just sit. You haven't done one yet?
I haven't done one.
I'm bringing you over. My guys over at iStretch Plus.
Okay.
Yeah. They're right here in Huntington. Yeah. Awesome. Great team. And they have the infrared sauna and they have the great ice plunges in there.
I'd love to.
35, 40 degrees, man. You sit in there and then when you're done, you dunk your head in. And you feel like you just took a dip with a polar bear in the Arctic. That's what you feel like.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. You said you're not like ego lifting and all that. We've all been guilty of it. Happens. Yep. Just it's part of the progression of learning your way in the weight room and whatnot. And some people grow out of it. A lot of people don't. Right. And then they're constantly injured and hurt. But it's reminded me of a quote from Kai from years ago, because I used to film Kai and we did a lot of stuff together. And he always said that I'm a weightlifter. I'm a bodybuilder, not a weightlifter. And 100%. I always loved that saying, because otherwise it's just, you're just moving. Well, I'm just going to keep moving weight. It's like, no, you got to challenge the muscle to where it is. You know, you don't have to squat 500 on everything. Just because you see that dude over there doing it doesn't mean that that's your journey and your path that you have to do.
Right.
You have to do what your muscle workload is. And it's different for every single person.
Yeah. I mean, it's as sad as it is, like, look at Ronnie Coleman, right? A legend. The guy has amazing. He's a legend, but like, that's not a prime example of what you want to become, right? You want to do this stuff to add years to your life, not take away, right? Not rely on fucking meds all day long and be, you know, out of like woo-woo, right? So I think that's just, that will get me enough. That I look at that and I'm like, okay, I'll check my ego. And I know I'm not going to go crazy with you know, ego training, because if I do, I know what's going to happen, right? And to speak on Kai, even like Phil Heath, a lot of my current training principles I get from them, because they, you look at the way they're training, they're the ones using 20-pound dumbbells to do bicep curls, mm-hmm. right? And they're going slow and controlled, pumping up the muscle. They'll still train to failure, but it's like, it's completely different than what most people are doing nowadays.
Yeah. I filmed Kai all over the world, and every single time I've seen him do 45-minute warm-ups before he starts, a lot of stretching, a lot of like dynamic movements of just like rolling the shoulders out. And, you know, he does it like he's a dancer. You know, he does it like he's on stage in front of a million people. But generally, he's warming up the right way, and he's not going crazy with the weight. He doesn't need to. Like, don't get me wrong. I mean, not crazy for the weight sometimes for him is like three plates on a bench press, and he's just sitting there.
That's light for him.
Going. But that's his journey. That's, you know, he's a guy that is a lot bigger than your average human being.
Right.
And, you know, the biggest pain point for me is I got into the fitness industry like so many others because I wanted to be healthy. And unfortunately, you know,
you wanted to get girls. Let's be real. That's why everyone gets in, and then you grow past that.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to just stop being fat, man. I was like, God damn, it's crazy out here. You know, but I wanted to be healthy. That's really what it was. I was pre-diabetic. They told me I'd need an insulin pump if I didn't stop getting heavy. And I was like, fuck, man, I hate needles. So let's go. Yeah. And then I wound up getting hemochromatosis, which is the biggest ironic kick in the ass ever. And I have to do phlebotomies every 3 months. So didn't matter anyway, if I've been hating needles. But so, you know, I wanted to just do this and be healthy. And I see so many other people that wanted the same. But they get so caught up in the ego lifting, and they get so caught up in the steroids and all this stuff. And then their bodies start to fail them early in life, 40s, 50s. That's still early in life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you said perfectly, we want to actually get longevity out of our bodies, and our lifestyles are trying to aid that process, not take it away.
Right.
So you look at a guy like Ronnie, whose body is failing him.
Right.
It's failing him not because it's old age. It's failing him because of the abuse that it's gone through for how many years now. It's tough to watch. When I see him at the expos, man, there's like a soft spot in me that feels like weird. And there's a lot of people that run up to him. Oh yeah, buddy. You know, all this stuff. And okay, you know, you play into the character and he does that, but I can't help but just sit there and go, man, that's gotta be somewhat depressing. 100%. It really does in his shoes. Like I don't think that he sits there sad for himself, because listen, he's made a name for himself. Right. He's made a lot of money, and I'm sure he still is making good money in the sport. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not his manager. But at the same time, you look at that and you're just like, was it worth it? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
To each their own. Everybody has a it was worth it point.
Right.
And maybe that was his, letting his body just deteriorate the way that it has. But I see him with those double crutches, man, and you're just like, fuck, dude. Yeah. I used to get jazzed up for the gym watching him squat 800.
Yeah.
And now you look and you go, oh, God.
At what cost?
At what cost, man? I don't know. To me, it's not worth it.
I agree.
It's the same thing with, you know, I keep bringing back jiu-jitsu because it's relevant to me right this second, but it's the same thing with like competing in jiu-jitsu. Mm. I'm not bad at jiu-jitsu. I'm not the best, but I'm definitely not horrible. I'm pretty good for the amount of time that I've been training. Everyone keeps telling me to do tournaments.
Yeah.
I'm going to go there and I'm going to have a dude that's just gassed up doing fucking smelling salts on the sideline, and I'm gonna have him rip an armbar without letting me tap. I don't know. Is it worth it?
Yeah.
For the trophy? I don't know. Am I going to be Gordon Ryan? Probably not.
Right.
You know, like, am I going to be like one of competing against B team at ADCC? Probably not. But yeah. I don't know. That's everyone's got that point.
Yeah, you never know. And again, I think you just have to ask yourself at what cost is it worth it to you? For some, it is.
And what was your cost for not going into the NPC?
Like you said, health, longevity. Now, of course, you know, I know plenty of people, clients, friends who do take stuff. Right?
Oh, this is everybody that comes on is usually very open about steroids and transparent and everything like that.
Yeah.
I do not shit on people for taking steroids. I do question people's motives at times.
Yeah.
And the unfortunate truth that you're probably, not you particularly, but on point, you know, in your seat, you're probably taking it because that guy's taking it. He's taking it because that guy's taking it. It's not necessarily because they feel like they needed it right out the gate. And that's the unfortunate waterfall effect of just like how everyone winds up on it because they're all competing at the same show. And that guy just put on 40 pounds of muscle. Holy shit. And now I got to put on 40 pounds.
Yeah. To me, it wasn't worth it simply because, of course, health and longevity. Also because I wasn't trying to become Mr. Olympia or go into that next level IFBB, NPC. But if it is your goal, by all means, you have to do it, right? You have to compete at that level and you have to do what it takes. That's all.
Sometimes you got
to
get a little crazy.
You have to do what it takes. But again, controlled and you know, doing it with the reminder in your head, like, hey, there's consequences to this, whether you like it or not, right? There's consequences to not doing it too. You're not going to be at the fullest level that you could be. Not naturally, of course, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I tell every single person that I know when John Meadows was alive, God rest his soul, man, when John Meadows was alive, when I was working with Flex Lewis, all these guys, when anytime anything would come up roughly, I would just go, just be safe, please.
Yeah.
That's all I ask. Yeah. Just be careful as your friend.
Right.
Just be careful. You're going to do what you're going to do. And that's cool. But just please be safe.
Yeah.
Be careful and don't abuse the shit.
Yeah. Especially in the early years, like 16 to 20, 21.
Oh, it's so
your
scary.
Your body,
dude.
Your mind is like still like so freaking fragile.
Well, what is it? Your body isn't fully developed until 25.
Yeah,
I think
like
that's something like that. Your brain as well.
Right.
Your brain and your neurons and everything is not fully finished until you're 25 years old. And you have dudes that are looking up to guys at the Mr. Olympia show that are 16, 17 years old. And it's a lot different. The vibes are a lot different. When I was that age and I looked at the guys in the magazines, I thought I had to take the supplements that they were pushing to get that big. Muscle tech.
Yeah, the protein.
All this extra shit, the fat burners to get shredded and all that. I didn't think that I had to take steroids.
Right.
That was later presented to me in the form of like, oh, that's why they look so different. Oh, you mean that 30-day transformation wasn't just because he was taking that fat burner? Oh, he was taking a full cycle. Interesting. Right. And you know, you're around it more and more being at the powerlifting and the bodybuilding gyms and you know, it's a weird thing because it's so taboo in nature.
Yeah.
But it's so openly accepted in the industries.
Yeah.
But don't talk about it. But we all know. Right. But don't talk about it.
Right.
You just sit there, you go, okay.
Yeah.
All right, sure. I'll never forget Sean Harris. Did you know Sean Harris?
Yeah.
Just rest in peace, man. Sean Harris was the fucking shit. I love Sean. Sean was my gym dad. One day Sean took out, he was eating his oats. He always ate his chocolate oats at the counter after he was done training. And he takes out like this napkin and he's unrolling something. And I look at him and I go, yo, do you use a straw to drink those chunky ass oats? I said, what is up with you? And he pulls out and it's a syringe and he goes, this is my insulin. He goes, my plan's a little different than yours, Nick. And I went, oh, gotcha. Yeah,
that makes sense.
That's he was transparent. It was funny, man.
Yeah. As long as you're open about it and you're not trying to do it for the wrong reasons.
Exactly.
I think you're fine.
And get checked, man.
Yeah.
Keep that, you know, the biggest thing that I tell people is get checked out.
Yeah.
No matter what, get your blood work done consistently.
Yeah.
If you're going to be on shit, you have to get your markers and know because, you know, if you start taking and then you get your blood test a year later, we don't know where you started before you started taking a cycle.
Right.
So now your levels could be all fucked up, but to you now this looks like baseline a year later.
Right.
So there's a lot of things that go into it that you have to take into account.
Absolutely.
I just find that there's not always a systematic or methodical approach that they go into it. It's more so like this guy told me to do this and I'm going to do that. And that's what always bothered me about it. You know, it was never funny story and then we'll get off steroids. It was never just like you never got a real straight answer. So
yeah.
When I first did my first show, my coach at the time, who, as always, I will never name on this show. If you know me, you know who he was. I can't stand the fucking guy. Dirtbag. Anyway, I would constantly wake up on Sundays with steroids on my plan. Constantly. When I sat down in his office, he told me, Nick, I just want you to know, it's chemical warfare out here. Like, okay. I'm natural.
Right.
If you can't coach me, then I'm going to go somewhere else. No. And what he wound up doing is just running me into the ground. But regardless, we're going to get back to the Sunday plans. Sunday plans would come in, and I'm away at college. And I'd see my meal plan. And then at the bottom, where the supplements were, like the ALA and the fat burner that I was taking and this and that, all of a sudden, this almost happened every other Sunday. You'd start seeing clenbuterol, tren, all this different stuff. And I look and I go, what am I reading?
Yeah.
So I'd email him back and I go, hey, let me just ask you something, because we have this conversation pretty regularly. I'm natural. I don't want to take steroids, but you keep putting it on my meal plan. That's the first thing.
Right.
The second thing is, even if I wanted to get these, where do you expect me to go and get these? Yeah. Am I supposed to just go to Rite Aid? Do you guys serve Tren here? Do you guys have Clen behind the counter? Yeah, nowadays they might. They're like, are you trans? They're like, fuck. They're like, oh man, you got me. So yeah, I was just like, so you want me to just obtain this from who?
Yeah.
The shady dude hanging out at the city center? Yeah. Nah, I'm good on that.
That's crazy that your coach, knew the fact that you were natural, yet still continue to try and push it on you. That's just straight up wrong and unethical, of course. But
well, I'll tell you what that was. What that was sloppy coaching is what it was. That was a coach who did not give a fuck about his natural athlete.
Right.
And what he did instead was he copy and pasted other people's meal plans and put it on mine. And his dumb ass, his big monkey ass, fucking stupid. He, fucking gorilla, he's huge. He really is. He's really a big dude. For his size, he's a big dude. He would just copy paste and he would just put it in there.
Yeah.
Send. That's what he would do. Okay.
Yeah.
And I get it every Sunday. I'm away at college, bro. Where am I getting this?
Yeah.
Where am I getting this? So that's the unfortunate side of the industry. And it hurts, man. It really does. It fucking hurts because I was so in love with the sport when I first did it. It was my biggest outlet after heartbreak.
Right.
It really was. After I lost that relationship, there was a piece of me that was yearning for something to attach to. Yeah. I was away at college. It was all new for me. I didn't know what was going on. But I knew that, oh, man, this makes me feel good.
Yeah.
The endorphins that I get from this make me feel good. The changes that I'm seeing in my body, that makes me feel good.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. I'm not, and then I'd find a couple of guys that would go to the gym with me. And I wound up going to Montaneri Bros Powerhouse Gym. So that's where I trained up in Connecticut.
Okay.
And it was just basically, I'm telling you, it was Bev's 2.0.
Yeah.
They had in the summer, it used to be a firehouse. I don't know if you've ever seen the gym.
No,
big garage doors, and they open it up, and then you just feel like you're lifting outside, like in Venice.
Wow.
You have these hot, hot days where you're in the gym and you just feel like you're training outside. And it was so magical. It sounds stupid.
It doesn't sound like Connecticut.
Yeah, no. Montaneri, bro. That's cool. And it's cool because, you have all walks of life to go to the gyms. And that's what I love about fitness as a whole. You had a lot of state troopers, you had a lot of businessmen, you had a lot of students, you had a lot of different people co-mingling in a space where the general consensus was we're all just trying to get better. That's really what it is.
Yep.
At the end of the day, no matter what you're taking, no matter what you're doing, the general consensus is I'm trying to get stronger, I'm trying to get leaner, I'm trying to get fitter, whatever it might be. That's generally why people are going there and busting their ass day in and day out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Terry Bros, the super gym. Oh man, I miss it. I got to go check. I haven't trained like that in a while. So there you go. It's literally.
Yeah, this looks just like Bev's.
It's like Bev's 2.0 with huge ceilings.
That's
the machines are, Evan Centipani?
Who?
Evan Centipani?
No.
Big time. He was a big time bodybuilder on the pro scene, but he's another one. He was a native up there in Connecticut. There you go. So those are the garage doors.
Oh, nice.
So they just blast those dudes open in the summer, and you sweat and you get humid. You feel like you're just dogging it out in there. It's great. I love
Sick.
It. That's what I love.
I love those old school vibes. Oh, yeah.
That was the best. Yeah. That was the best vibes. And it's funny because as I go on a rant, it's funny because during COVID especially, I was getting those vibes at home. And it felt so good.
Yeah.
Because I bought a ton of equipment.
Same.
And it's all at my mom's house because I have an apartment now. So it's all at my mom's house. And she goes, are you going to take this? Can I get rid of it? Do not touch the $5,000 Rogue Monster Rack.
You got that?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Monster Rack. It's huge.
Nice.
I got the Fat Bar pull up.
Oh, man.
I bought 3 power bars, 2 Sorinex bars.
Went all in.
Oh, yeah. I got the landmine attachment. I got kettlebells ranging from 10 pounds all the way up to 130 or 140. I had 500 pounds of the calibrated Rogue plates for powerlifting. You would love that. And I got an assault bike.
Nice.
Yeah, I got everything. But that's what it felt like when me and the homies would start training. We would just all go in there. It was hot.
Yeah.
Just hanging out, blasting music. There was nothing else to do. And we were just training in there.
That's the best.
I can't believe I was still fat after that. That was amazing to me that I came out of that fat. I was like, all we did was train all day anyway. But then you look at it the other time and it was like a lot of whiskey.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of video games.
Right. Yeah,
so that was the adverse.
Absolutely.
Let me see what I have. Oh, that's right. The orthopedist. I had a story about that for you. I went to an orthopedist one time and it kind of derives back to, this is just something you're going to have to live with. I went to an orthopedist and I was getting weird muscle pain in my hamstring. And every time I did a hamstring curl above 120 pounds, I would get this crazy pinching.
Right.
And it was very uncomfortable. I'd get it in the knee, a little bit on the side of the knee, and it just felt off. So I went to an orthopedist. He does x-rays.
Yeah.
Like, dude, I need an MRI. It's not, I don't need x-rays.
Right.
Like, whatever. So I does x-rays.
In their procedure, they need the x-rays.
Yeah. So stupid, man. It's so dumb. It's such a waste of time. So he comes in and he just goes, man, you got the knees of a 15-year-old. I go, I don't know if that's a compliment, brother. I'm like, but hey, thank you. He's like, don't talk about my knees like that. You're making me feel weird. So then he just goes, yeah. It's like, so tell me about what happens. And I tell him exactly what I just said to you. And he just goes, okay. You know, best, you know, thing I can give you advice wise is just don't go over 120 pounds.
I saw that coming. I saw that coming.
Okay. But like, what if I want to?
Right.
He just goes, yeah, just, I wouldn't. Cause then you're going to feel that.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, well, that doesn't really like, fix.
Did I just really come? Yeah, dude, it's crazy.
Doesn't really fix what I'm having a problem with, but okay. Yeah. I just won't go over 120 pounds. I'll just live. And then anytime I have to, I'll just be like, oh, look, there it is again. The old hamstring.
Right.
So it's so weird.
It's a cop out, right? That's what I said. If you go to a traditional doctor, you tell him, hey, squats hurt. Okay, let's stop squatting. Hey, deadlifts hurt. Hey, okay, just don't deadlift for a month.
Don't do it.
It's like, okay, but why? Like, what if that's something you really, hey, running hurts. Have you tried not running? It's like, come on.
No, I was getting mugged.
It's a cop out, man, because they don't want to take the time to identify what is actually causing the problem. And that's why I think physical therapists, and I'm not just like plugging myself, like physical therapists in general have a big kind of just an area to help people and kind of listen to people, because your traditional orthos, people are coming in and out. It's like 5 minutes you get time with them, right? Right. And that's where the only kind of one-on-one care you do have in the healthcare world is usually with a physical therapist or occupational therapist. But even then, the traditional way it's still kind of broken, because like we talked about, you're going in, do a couple basic exercises, you get 10 minutes with your PT. And again, if they're not familiar with the gym, working out, lifting, it's like, how are they equipped to let you know the exact stuff to do?
And how shocking is it that they aren't? That you go to most of these places, they're just blown out of shape. And you look at them and you go, wow, you're supposed to be the one that's going to give me health advice.
Exactly. It's like an accountant whose taxes are all messed up.
Yeah.
Would you really trust them? No. So would you really trust a nutritionist who's 300 pounds?
I got flack for that. I put a clip up like that. I don't know if you ever saw that one. I got flack for that.
I
said, I can't take you seriously if you're giving me health advice and you're 300 pounds overweight. I can't do it. And I got flat. Yo, it's crazy, man. Yeah. You just see the people that defend anything.
Yeah.
They just want to bicker about
absolutely
anything.
And in reverse, like I've had a lot of people who come to me. They're like, hey, SK, like I came to you because you walk the walk, right? Like you work out. You're in shape. Like
you're in great shape.
You walk the walk. I was like, thank you. And as it should be, right? Like we think we're not judging people, but like it's automatic in our brain. Yep. If a 300-pound dude is a nutritionist and giving me advice on what to eat, I'm just not going to take it seriously. Neither should you. No one should.
Yeah.
It's fucking bullshit.
And now let's give the adverse. Shouts to Evan, OG, the homie. Evan's in fantastic shape.
Yeah.
Taylor is in fantastic shape. Kim, all the girls, any trainer, Joe, Eric, all the trainers that train there are in fantastic shape. No one's out of shape.
Good.
Yeah. Why would I expect anything different? Why can't I expect my healthcare provider to hold themselves accountable?
Exactly.
And to be healthy. It's weird. You told me that I should be eating less meat, right, or this and that, but and that you're on this diet, right, but if that's what the yield, if that diet yields those results,
yeah,
I don't know if I want to do it, brother.
Backwards. It's backwards. Yeah. Completely.
Like I don't go to Sarah's Jiu-Jitsu Academy because he sucks at jiu-jitsu.
Right.
No, he's an assassin.
Yeah.
That's why I go there. I don't go there because he's bad.
Absolutely.
So why would I expect any different from any other facet of life?
You gotta walk the walk.
Dude, it's so crazy.
Yeah.
And actually that goes into another topic for you that I had, which was what are your thoughts on general rehab plans and why don't you like them?
Yeah, and usually what I'm seeing is with these general rehab plans is that there's just not enough challenge for the more active population. And again, it might work for the 60, 70, 80-year-old who's never touched the weight. You give them, they have shoulder pain, you give them a couple of external rotation, internal rotation, changes their life. They have back pain, you give them a couple of bridges, clamshells, changes their life. That's fine. But for the more active population, people go to the gym, you know, there's more variables to play with. There's just not enough challenge. And there's not a consideration for the load that's being put on their body outside of the rehab work in the gym, right? Because there's been plenty of times where I've had patients and clients who've come to me and we've done rehab work. They're not getting that much progress. And I'm like, hey, let's look at your workout program. Let me tweak some stuff because, again, I walk the walk. I know what we're doing in the gym. Let's tweak some stuff. Boom, the pain is just like gone. I had one guy with shoulder pain and we tried so much rehab work, like so much. And then I asked them, and this took a while because I was working at a job at the time. I asked him, like, what's your workout routine? He listed it out. I'm like, well, first of all, you're overtraining way too much. We cut back volume, put him on the right path, and boom, the shoulder pain just disappeared.
Yeah.
So it's like, was it the rehab or was it just managing load? Right? It's
probably
just
a combination.
No, definitely a combination of both, but the managing load had a bigger part to that person specifically. So I think it's partly there's not enough challenge in these traditional rehab plans and also not taking into account what they're doing outside of that in terms of overall load on their body.
Yeah. I'm probably overtraining right now and under eating severely.
Most people are.
Yeah. Especially with the doubles, the weights in the morning, the HIIT cardio, all that stuff in the morning, and then jiu-jitsu at night. My elbows will not stop making noise. It is so scary. Every time.
Click, click.
They didn't do it that one time. Every time it could be like a minute that I just don't move them, and then I just move the.
If it's not painful, I wouldn't.
Not painful.
Yeah, clicking and popping. It's so common. Like I could stand, my hip will crack and pop, my knee pops. Like that's fine. That stuff is not too much of a problem as long as it's not like pain right away.
No pain. But I do get. I had an AC joint issue when I first started doing jiu-jitsu. A lot of the roughing it out type feelings of like holding a side control and whatnot. AC joint was bad. And then lately it's just been like my shoulder joint has, but it's not when I roll. It's not when I do lightweight. The second I go over like 60, 70 pounds on a shoulder press, you start pinching. Start feeling that pinch.
Don't go over 60, 70 pounds.
I was waiting for that.
It's easy. It's easy. Fuck. How you solve it.
I've been fucking up this whole time, man. I should have listened to that guy. He was an expert in the field of just rehab.
No, but when it goes back to that, actually, you know, most traditional orthos, even a lot of traditional PTs, they're just not asking enough questions, right? It's like, you tell me, you know, going over 60, 70 pounds hurts your shoulder. It's like, there's definitely more variables playing into account that I, as the professional, have to extract from you. Where exactly does it hurt? Does it hurt afterwards? Does it only hurt during this motion? Have you tried a different variation of that same exercise? Does it still hurt there? Is it worse in the mornings? Is it better with movement? There's so many questions. And I will exhaust my clients often with a lot of questions because it gives me more feedback and data to understand what's really going on.
Reverse engineering a car accident.
Exactly.
Like cops and shit. It's crazy.
There's so many variables. So more questions will lead to better results.
And I was going to ask, how do you streamline the process of bringing out a newer rehab program for your clients?
In terms of what?
Just like, how do you streamline it in terms of like efficiently treating whatever is going on?
Yeah, I always try to, of course, address the area that's problematic, but also figure out what other areas could be contributing to this. If you have back pain, we're not just addressing the back. We're looking at the hips. We're looking at the knee. We're looking at the pelvis. We're looking at the T-spine, the upper back, everything to make sure that we're addressing everything as a whole, right? And again, that whole concept of like, we have to understand the root cause of this, right? Because a lot of back pain, it's not just the back. So it's more so just understanding that there's a ton of variables playing into account, and we want to control all those variables as best as possible.
I got the Sellright. Do you like the Sellright?
Yeah, the Sellright is cool. I mean, yeah, it's cool. I mean, something like that where it's so...
Oh man, I spent $80 on it.
It's expensive.
Give me something, man.
Yeah. No, the Sellright is cool because a lot of people do have tight hip flexors, yeah. Right? But I think there's definitely, I wouldn't say better, but equally as effective ways to release your psoas rather than needing to spend $80, right? So, when something like that blows up...
Got me.
When something like that blows up, it's usually a sign like, okay, there's this big problem that a lot of people just want an easy way out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it was as simple as you put this on, you roll it out, and boom, you're out of pain, I wouldn't be in business.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. So generally when something like that blows up, I'm like, okay, let's figure out a better way to attack this.
And then probably people start coming to you once they start seeing it everywhere. The right. People start coming to you, go, I think I got tight hips.
Yeah. Like the foam roller, right? The foam roller blew up. Like,
yeah.
Whoever invented that is like freaking racking in billions.
There's got to be somebody that had the original patent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Styrofoam in a cylinder.
Genius.
Here we go. Roll on it.
Genius.
Make sure I remember watching people get their AT bands.
Yeah.
Just rolling on it. I'm like, yeah, this is warming me up for squats. And just put 225 on the bar. And
right.
So it's funny. You said your old videos of you lifting. I sit ass to grass when I squat now. Ass to grass. And whether that's good for me every single time or not, I just always sit down. I'm sure there's a time and a place for it.
Yeah.
Just like any other type of lifting. But the funny thing to me is I put a video up. This is when I was in Connecticut. I put a video up of me squatting. And I thought I was the bee's knees. I thought the form was immaculate. And I look back at that video.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, dude, it is cringy.
Yeah.
It's a tough watch. It's a tough watch. And one of the comments was like this dude who was a juiced up dude. He just goes, let me know when you start squatting. And I will never forget that, because when I read that, I went, oh, he's right. I'm bad. Like, this is not good.
Yeah.
So I started unloading the bar a little bit more, focusing on getting my ankle mobility and open the hips up and push. And I was able to like really squat with heavy weight, actually sit down. But it was that comment that just made me go, oh, we got to like get this under control.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you're looking back at old videos and you're not cringing, then that's a sign that, you know, it's usually a good sign. It's like, all right, so, you know, you've grown, you've progressed.
Yeah.
Because I look back same way. I'm like, holy crap, I did not know anything. Even now.
Even now,
10 years down the line, I look back at videos now. I mean, I probably will think the same thing, but it's wild.
So I know you have to leave soon because you do have an appointment.
Yeah.
I want to ask you a couple more questions and then we can always reconvene. Maybe we'll have Ricky on at the same time next one. We'll all just hang out, eat some food. So what do you see most often in the bodybuilding world in terms of injuries, because they're your target client?
I would say back pain is probably the most prevalent.
Okay. And you're working with like large individuals most of the time. So you're really, you know, do you see a lot
It's a good mix.
It's a good mix, yeah. Do you see a lot of the back pain due to compensation? Is it an injury that they fucked up themselves?
It's like, usually because of a lack of prioritizing some form of mobility work.
And that was the question I was going to ask you afterwards. Is it preventable?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, 100%. Because I've worked with plenty of people where, you know, chronic back pain, and we start unlocking their hips, their spine, work on some mobility, properly managing the load on their body, and boom, the pain dissipates, right? So it's totally preventable. Absolutely. Just because it's common doesn't mean it's normal, right? Because one in three or two people have back pain by the time they're 40. So just because that's common doesn't mean that it's normal, right? And it's completely preventable.
Okay. Wrapping up, what is one thing you wish you knew 10 years ago that you know now?
One thing I wish I knew 10 years ago that I know now?
Yep, that you currently know that would have helped you 10 years ago.
Train smarter. Yeah, train smarter. But, you know, I say that because I do believe everything happens for a reason. If I didn't get injured, I probably wouldn't be in the spot that I am now, physical therapist, helping other people. But train smarter, yeah.
And how do you
listen to your body?
What do you think is the best way to train smarter?
Yeah, listen to your body, prioritize the mobility work, and know when to push, know when to pull back.
Cool.
Yeah.
Big SK, do me a solid. let everybody know in the camera how they can get in touch with you if they either want to follow you, talk to you, get physical therapy done by you. Please let the people know.
Yeah, I'm right on Instagram. It's Dr. Saranj underscore Kapoor.
And do you have an office or are you all mobile?
Yeah, it's so half of it is in-person office inside of Profit upstairs.
And oh, cool.
I have the other half is online.
Oh, I didn't realize you're in Profit.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, sick. Okay.
Yeah, so that's the in-person side. Then I have the online side, which is remote. And
okay. So right in Deer Park.
Everywhere. Yeah.
Beautiful. Listen, dude, I appreciate you. I don't want to keep you any further because I know you have to go and I want to be respectful of your time. This is big episode number 94 with my man SK. Once again, I appreciate you for taking the time out to hang out with Kenji and I, who's been napping the whole time. He's supposed to be operating the cameras. Come on, man. Everybody that's listening, I hope you learned something amazing. Definitely hit my man up if you have any questions or concerns. More than willing to answer. He's got a lot of content on his page that you'll learn a ton from as well. And as usual, the call to action for me, like, share, subscribe. I really hope y'all enjoyed the episode. Episode 94 with SK, Dr. SK. And on that note, I appreciate all y'all for fucking with us. But for now, peace.
Peace. Thank you for having me, man. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you.
Of course.